We're going to be continuing with a series of programs we've been doing about the Ku Klux Klan. And in this broadcast, and actually the next two broadcasts at least, we're going to be digressing a little bit from the subject of the Ku Klux Klan per se. And what we're going to be doing is taking a look at the origins of the Nazi Party in Germany. And we're going to be doing that for the purpose of taking a look at some rather ominous structural similarities between the present-day Klan, and in particular the U.S. government agents operating within that Klan in principal leadership roles, and the formation of the German Nazi Party in the 1920s. Now, in order to understand the origins of the Nazi Party, it's important to understand the history of how World War I ended and what happened in Germany just after the end of the First World War. Now, the First World War basically came to an end when there was an abortive revolution in Germany. The German people were growing very tired, not only of the very difficult economic conditions, which were the result of the British blockade. The British Navy had very effectively blockaded Germany, and many key imports were not coming in, and this caused tremendous economic hardship in Germany. And on top of that, of course, the huge casualties being sustained by all of the nations, including the Germans during the First World War, made the population very restless. Basically, men were sick and tired of facing certain death in the trenches, and the very large, powerful Communist Party in Germany it should be said that a revolution sort of coalesced around the large Communist organization in Germany. Basically, the German workers and German soldiers hoisted the red flag and formed workers and soldiers Soviets or councils, just like they did in the Soviet Union during the Bolshevik Revolution, basically, or rather during the Russian Revolution, I should say, and that eventually, of course, resulted in communism coming to Russia. The difference between the German Revolution, which, needless to say, this revolution sabotaged the German war effort, it brought it to an abrupt halt. The difference between the German Revolution and the revolution in the Soviet Union was, of course, the fact that the German Revolution was unsuccessful. Interpretations of as to just exactly why that happened vary. At any rate, it's important to understand that the army in Germany remained loyal to the vested interests, and the very large German middle class also looked askance at the revolution, so that basically it did not succeed. Now, we're going to touch back on some events during the course of this abortive German Revolution in the next broadcast, perhaps the next two broadcasts. What I'd like to look at in this program here, and what we're going to be looking at, is the functioning of an organization called the FEHME, last name F-E-H-M-E. Now, the FEHME was an ancient organization which had been used by the basically the German Junkers, the feudal landowning class, to basically stamp out any threat of peasant rebellion. Any peasants or anybody in that society who offered the possibility of mounting a significant challenge to the powers of the manorial lords was promptly executed. And the FEHME operated in secrecy. It operated at night. They killed in a ritualistic fashion, and it was in many ways very similar stylistically. Organizations are basically interchangeable and to a considerable extent synonymous. They were called the Free Corps, or the so-called Freikorps, spelled F-R-E-I-K-O-R-P-S, the German term for Free Corps. It's also known as the Black Reichswehr, and the Reichswehr being the German army, the Black Reichswehr being an underground component of that very same organization, okay? Now, both the Freikorps and Black Reichswehr units, which, remember, were underground military units operating in Germany after the end of World War I. Supposedly, the German army had been demobilized, but as I said, continued to operate in a clandestine, de facto fashion. The Freikorps and Black Reichswehr both, in essence, revived the FEHME, and the FEHME was reorganized in Germany and served to systematically assassinate not only all of the leaders of the German, the abortive German Revolution, but also to systematically wipe out all of the democratic political leadership in the Weimar Republic, and this paved the way for Nazism. And it's worth noting that virtually all of the key Nazis were key participants in the Freikorps and Black Reichswehr Femek killings. Okay? Now, perhaps the best account of the Femek assassination program, which, again, eliminated not only the revolutionary leaders of Germany, but also all of the democratic leadership of Weimar Germany, and directly paved the way for Hitler's rise to power. The best account of this organization's functioning is in a book called The Plot Against the Peace. That was authored by Michael Sayers, S-A-Y-E-R-S, and Albert E. Kahn, K-A-H-N. And the book was published in hardcover in 1945 by the Dial Press. And in describing the operations of the FEMA and its origins, Sayers and Kahn write as follows in The Plot Against the Peace. After the last war, that being World War I, the dreaded FEMA was revived in Germany as the secret weapon of the underground officers' corps of the General Staff, financed by the Junkers and industrialists. When the FEMA returned to Germany following the 1918 armistice, writes the European journalist Paul Winkler in his book The Thousand-Year Conspiracy, its reappearance was due to the initiative of two groups of interests, the Junkers and the leaders of heavy industry in Westphalia. In any event, every clue to the crimes of the revived FEMA uncovered by German tribunals or contemporary newspapers in their exposures led directly either to either the Junkers or to heavy industry. The principal aim was to execute, one by one, the leaders of the young German Republic. The FEMA directly paved the way for Nazism in Germany. Within 3 years after the signing of the peace, no less than 354 Femic assassinations were perpetuated in Germany against Germans interested in upholding German democracy and world peace. One by one, in the name of the vengeance of the FEMA, the best leaders of the German democracy were wiped out. The assassinations occurred with baffling regularity. In every case, as the various trials and investigations disclosed, the killers were German army officers, generally staff officers, and only rarely non-commissioned officers. All of these officers belonged to the underground military organizations of the General Staff, the so-called Freikorps and Black Reichswehr. Each Freikorps and Black Reichswehr unit had its own FEMA. By the law of the FEMA, the bloody task, unquote, the actual killing, was considered to be the privilege of the higher-ranking officers. Protected by the German General Staff, whose will they executed, the officer murderers of the FEMA acted with incredible boldness. They openly warned of their intention to kill and boasted of the killings. Almost without exception, the FEMA killers went unpunished. Usually, they simply vanished after the murder. When arrested and brought to trial before the German courts, they were acquitted or subjected to fines or ridiculously small prison terms, and then pardoned or permitted to escape. In the innumerable cases of minor political murders, where the victims of the FEMA were communists, Catholic, or Jews, no punishment at all was meted out by the German courts. A German murderer is not a murderer when the victim is a Jew, a Catholic, or a communist, unquote, indignantly reported E. A. Maurer in a dispatch to the Nation on March in a dispatch to the Nation on March 11th, 1925. Who decides? The courts. Maurer, by the way, is M-O-W-R-E-R. That was written by an American correspondent in Germany 8 years before Hitler came to power. And next, Sayers and Kahn go into a description of the Femic killings, and we're going to pick right up with this. Now, it's worth keeping in mind, you know, as I indicated, and as Sayers and Kahn mentioned in their passage, that the Femic assassinations were directly responsible for Hitler's rise to power because they systematically eliminated not only the leaders of the abortive German Revolution, but all of the democratic leadership of the Weimar Republic. Keep that in mind as you listen to the description of the FEMA provided here by Sayers and Kahn. They begin by describing the murder, the FEMIC assassinations of the two main figures of the German Revolution, a woman named Rosa Luxemburg and a fellow by the name of Karl Liebknecht. Luxemburg, L-U-X-U-M-B-E-R-G. Karl Liebknecht, L-I-E-B. K-N-E-C-H-T. Okay, and they describe how those people were murdered and how Liebknecht and Rosenberg were murdered, and basically how Luxemburg, I should say, was murdered, and how the their killers were acquitted and how they went on to become leading officers in the SS. The two key figures there are a fellow by the name of Captain von Flughartung, Pflugk-Hartung, and a Lieutenant Vogel, V-O-G-E-L. And the section of the Femic assassinations that we're going to pick up with here concerns the next victim of the Femic assassination units of the Freikorps and Black Reichswehr. That was a fellow by the name of Kurt Eisner, last name E-I-S-N-E-R. Sayers and Kahn write of Eisner's killing. The next Fema victim was Kurt Eisner, Prime Minister of the short-lived Revolutionary Bavarian Republic, which was ruthlessly suppressed by the officers' regiments of the General Staff. On February 21st, 1919, Kurt Eisner was waylaid near his home and murdered by two shots in his head. The killer was the high-ranking army officer Count Arco Valley, last name A-R-C-O-V-A-L-L-E-Y. Again, public clamor forced official action. Arco was arrested, tried, and found guilty and sentenced to death. Then the FEMA went into operation to protect its agent. An ultimatum from Captain Dietl, D-I-E-T-L, of the Bavarian Reichswehr to the Bavarian government read, quote, "Either Arco will be pardoned, or you will all be hanged by tomorrow," unquote. Arco's sentence was promptly commuted to, quote, "confinement in a fortress," unquote. Later, Arco's sentence was suspended, and he was appointed by the German Social Democratic Republic as director of the Süddeutsche Lufthansa, a major state-controlled aviation concern. By 1929, Arco was a key liaison between the Nazi Party and German industry. When Hitler came to power, the assassin of Kurt Eisner became one of the heads of the Nazi commercial aviation, key instrument of German intrigue and espionage throughout the world. Arco's protector, Captain Dietl of the Bavarian Reichswehr, became the first open Nazi officer in the German army. In 1943, Hitler delivered a special funeral oration for Dietl, who, as commander of the Nazi Wehrmacht on the Murmansk front, had met with an unexpected death in Russia. In 1919, Revolutionary Bavaria was a concentration point for FEMA operations. On the estates of Bavarian Junkers, the underground officers' corps maintained their secret arms caches and military training centers. By 1921, Adolf Hitler's Nazi Party had its headquarters in Munich, the capital of Bavaria. One by one, the leaders of the Bavarian Democratic Revolution were systematically eliminated by the FEMA. On May 2nd, 1919, Gustav Landauer, L-A-N-D-A-U-E-R, famous German Shakespearean authority and philologist, former Minister of Education in the Bavarian Republic, was kidnapped, beaten, and shot to death by a FEMA unit of German officers led by Baron von Gagen, last name G-A-G-E-N. Eyewitnesses to the crime testified that Baron von Gagen knocked Landauer down with a club, and he and other officers trampled on the elderly scholar and kicked him. Amid shouts and applause, non-commissioned officer Degele, last name D-I-G-E-L-E, yelled, "Won't the pig die at all? Wir denn das Schwein gar nicht sterben?" and fired a shot through Landauer's back, which killed him. At the trial, the court fined Baron von Gagen 300 marks. Non-commissioned officer Degele was accused of manslaughter, unquote, but acquitted on the grounds that, quote, "he could have been under the impression that he was acting under orders," unquote. Proceedings against all other officers involved were suspended. During a session of the Bavarian Landtag in the summer of 1921, Deputy Karl Gareis, last name G-A-R-E-I-S, exhibited a pile of documents and announced, quote, "I have here the evidence of a 1,000 years conspiracy, evidence which I shall present to you shortly," unquote. Gareis was understood to be referring to the operations of the FEMA and its notorious connection with the Junkers, but Gareis's evidence was never made public. A few days after his speech in the Landtag, Deputy Gareis was accosted by two men in the street and shot to death. The assassins escaped and were never apprehended. The Bavarian police did not even try to find them. The FEMA killings went on. After their successes in Bavaria, the killers became bolder. On August 26, 1921, FEMA killers of the Freikorps unit commanded by Baron Manfred von Killinger, last name K-I-L-L-I-N-G-E-R, assassinated Reich Secretary of the Treasury Matthias Erzberger, leader of the German Catholic Centrist Party, who had proposed a tax plan contrary to the wishes of the Junkers and industrialists. Erzberger's last name, by the way, is Erzberger. Erzberger was waylaid while on vacation in the Black Forest by two armed officers, Lieutenants Heinrich Tillesen and Heinrich Schultz, and shot in the back. As Erzberger lay on the ground, Tillesen and Schultz fired 11 more shots into his body. A few days later, aided by German government officials, the assassins escaped into Hungary. Subsequently, Tillesen became a high-ranking Nazi and married the daughter of the pro-Nazi Hungarian Prime Minister, Gembes, last name G-O-E-M-B-O-E-S. I'm not sure on the pronunciation of that. His accomplice, Schultz, became a lieutenant of the SS. The Femme Terror reached a climax with the daylight assassination on a Berlin street of the German Foreign Minister, Walter Rathenau, R-A-T-H-E-N-A-U, who had dared to oppose the secret war plans of the General Staff and had outraged the Nazis by signing the Rapallo Treaty of Friendship with Soviet Russia. Rathenau was publicly marked for Femic execution. In beer halls throughout Germany, fanatical officers sang, "Not abden Walter Rathenau, der gottverdammte Judensau." Crack down Walter Rathenau, the goddamn Jewish sow. On June 23rd, 1922, Rathenau was assassinated in his car at the corner of Wallot Street in Berlin. As Rathenau's automobile slowed down, a black sports car drew up alongside it. Two men stood up in the black car, and one of them fired several shots at Rathenau with a Tommy gun. The other man flung a hand grenade. Subsequent investigation established that the black car had been placed at the disposal of the assassins by Saxonian Nazi industrialists. By these Saxonian Nazi industrialists, the brothers Johann and Franz Kuchenmeister of Freiburg, last name K-U-E-C-H-E-N-M-E-I-S-T-E-R. The Femme leader and originator of the assassination plot was Lieutenant Willy Gunther, key agent of the General Staff and temporary private secretary to Ludendorff. Gunther is G-U-E-N-T-H-E-R. Many other high-ranking officers were directly implicated. The two killers, First Lieutenants Erwin Kern and Hermann Fischer, were chased by police who trailed them to the Salak Castle near Kesel, where they had their hideout. The police opened fire and Kern was killed. Fischer committed suicide. The driver of the murder car, Ernst Werner Tachau, was arrested and sentenced to a term of imprisonment, but was later pardoned and joined the Nazi Party. Another accomplice in the crime, Ernst von Salomon, S-A-L-O-M-O-N, became one of the most famous Nazi propagandists, writing regularly in Goebbels' weekly newspaper, Das Reich. After Hitler came to power, the bodies of the two killers who died at Salak Castle were exhumed and reburied with great ceremony, and at Hitler's order, a monument was erected to their memory as, quote, Germany's national heroes, unquote. The murder of Rathenau eliminated the last prominent personality in Germany capable of obstructing the plans of the General Staff. The public Femic assassinations were halted. German newspapers reported that the Femme had been disbanded. But the Femme Terror throughout Germany had not stopped. It operated continuously against the German populace. Week after week, the German local newspapers reported cases of bodies found in ditches, workers beaten to death, farmers hanged, merchants and intellectuals tortured and shot. Throughout the 1920s, the Femme was used to silence German citizens who happened to stumble on evidence of the secret war preparations of the General Staff, and against members of the Black Reichswehr itself, who had incurred the wrath of the underground officers' corps. In later years, with the rise of organized Nazi murder gangs, the officers' Femme temporarily vanished from the German scene. The work of the Femme was carried on by the Gestapo and the SS, most of whose leaders had originally been leaders of the Femme. And that basically concludes the story of the Femme. Now, we're going to be coming back to the origins of German Nazism in the next broadcast. And in particular, we're going to take a look at how the personnel involved with the Femme, the Freikorps, and the Black Reichswehr were also directly involved with the actual formation of the German National Socialist Workers' Party, the Nazi Party. And we're going to look at that relationship at length and in detail in the next broadcast, perhaps two broadcasts. Before concluding, let me sum up what we've looked at. We began by taking a look at, basically summing up the history of the end of the First World War, namely the abortive revolution which took place in Germany, and that brought Germany to defeat in World War One. We then took a look at how the revolution was put down, and that this revolution resulted in the formation of underground German army units called the Black Reichswehr and Freikorps, and they in turn revived an ancient manorial terrorist organization in Germany called the FEMA. And the Freikorps and Black Reichswehr FEMA units systematically eliminated the leaders of the abortive revolution and also all of the democratic leadership in Germany. And we took a lengthy description, took a look at a lengthy description of the FEMIC assassinations provided very eloquently in The Plot Against the Peace by Michael Sayers and Albert E. Kahn. And keep in mind, as I said, that the FEMIC assassinations paved the way for Hitler's rise to power, and that many of the key figures in the Freikorps and Black Reichswehr FEMIC assassination program are going to crop up prominently in our examination of the formation of the German Nazi Party. And that will be compared with the with elements of the present-day Ku Klux Klan. That concludes this broadcast. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening. Now, during this half hour, we're going to be continuing with our discussion of the origins of the Nazi Party in Germany, and by way of comparing this with certain elements of the contemporary Ku Klux Klan. Now, you recall that in the last broadcast, we covered the operations of the FEMA. That was a secret underground murder organization formed by the German General Staff, the Reichswehr, the German Army, between the two World Wars. And what that organization did was to systematically exterminate the revolutionary and the democratic political leadership of Weimar Germany. Recall that, as we saw last week, World War I ended when there was an unsuccessful revolution in Germany. Basically, workers and soldiers sick of not only of the certainty of death in the trenches in World War One, but also of the severe economic conditions in Germany brought on by the successful British blockade of that country, which prevented imports from coming in and created, as I said, very harsh economic conditions. Well, they staged a revolution which, unlike the revolution in Russia, was unsuccessful and was put down by the army. Now, after this revolution, the leaders of that revolution, as well as all of the democratic political leaders in Weimar Germany, were systematically murdered by the FEMA, this secret underground organization set up by the German army. Now, in this broadcast, we're going to be continuing right where we left off last time with our discussion of these murder groups, and specifically, we're going to look at the connections between these groups and the fledgling Nazi Party. Now, the key name to remember with regard to not only the operations of the FEMA, this underground murder organization of the Reichswehr, but also with regard to the origins of the German Nazi Party, is a fellow named Ernst Röhm, last name R-O-H-M. And the book we're going to begin with, and in fact that's going to occupy our attention throughout most of the broadcast, is a book called Der Führer. Der Führer was published by a German author named Konrad Heiden, last name H-E-I-D-E-N, and the English language edition was published in 1944 by Houghton Mifflin and Company. Okay, Der Führer, Conrad Heiden, Houghton Mifflin, hardcover edition, 1944. And in Der Führer, Conrad Heiden identifies Ernst Röhm as the key figure in directing the underground murder organizations of the FEMA. And recall, the FEMA killing groups were formed out of the so-called Black Reichswehr, or Freikorps, or Freikorps, as it would be said in English. Now, these were the underground extensions of the German army. And Conrad Heiden in Der Führer identifies Ernst Röhm as the key figure in the formation of the Reichswehr and the Black Reichswehr and the Freikorps, both of those contributing to the FEMIC murder organizations. Now, in addition to Röhm, a key name to remember in the passage I'm about to read you is Colonel von Epp, V-O-N-E-P-P. He was the German General Staff Officer who was, technically speaking, over Ernst Röhm, and appears to have been his contact with the German General Staff. We're going to run up against von Epp here again in a second.